Wow, Kurt Warner and the Cardinals came out and said, "What's my name?"
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground.
Touchdown, Arizona!
That was beautiful! Oh my goodness!
The latest news and notes on the Arizona Cardinals from the guys who cover the team.
Anquan Boldin has put the diaper firmly on their defensive coordinator.
DRC can take off the hood and drop the sickle. This one's over.
From Cardinals headquarters,
Adrian Wilson just ate his liver with fava beans and a fine Chianti.
That'll win you a gig in the NFL.
Larry Fitzgerald. Oh, my goodness.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Get your rear right back in the locker room.
And we interrupt the continuing coverage of Tiger Woods 24-7 with this edition of Cardinals Underground. Paul Calvisi, Darren Urban, Ron Wolfley, Jim Omohundro over there, but we have no time for introductions. I want an explanation how Brett Favre ended up being named one of Barbara Walters' 10 most fascinating people from 2009. Can someone say he didn't look all that fascinating to me on Sunday Night Football, gentlemen? I mean, if anything, there should have been a late erasure and just sort of omission from Barbara Wawa's final list there after what the Cardinals did to Brett Favre on Sunday evening, called out and predicted by somebody with the last name Pigskin, who's currently holding the NFL Network, Mike Flagg, earned thusly after yet another fantastic... It's bookend predictions this year, gentlemen. What did I say back in September, my Castrol theory of viscosity, which we will revisit considering the opponent on the schedule this week, and then, of course, the prediction, the only prediction heard in the wind all week leading up to Sunday Night Football.
I will say this. You did seem to nail the whole Minnesota didn't play anybody as good as the Cardinals kind of thing. I got to give you credit for that.
Well, I let other people say it, Ron Wolfley, you know, because it just seems so self-serving if yours truly is the one who has to restate it. So,
for please, in the name of all that is good and righteous, don't get me started on that. Brett Favre was the victim of pressure. The Arizona Cardinals were able to actually rush Brett Favre with 4, drop 7, get pressure on Brett Favre and kind of mess him up and his rhythm up a little bit, as opposed to the Minnesota Vikings. Everyone thought that was going to be the matchup. It was going to be the Vikings being able to rush 4, with that vaunted defensive line, and get pressure on Kurt Warner and be able to drop 7. And that was going to a little quid pro quo. It totally flipped around. One thing in exchange for another became the Arizona Cardinals pressuring Brett Favre with 4 and the lack of pressure thereof on Kurt Warner by the Minnesota Vikings.
Well, your Arizona Cardinals have 35 sacks, which is, number 3 in the NFL right now. So, I mean, a team whose greatest liability going into the season, ostensibly, theoretically, was pass rush or lack thereof. I mean, but you know what? It gets back, gentlemen, to our old saying over here from Pauly Pigskin Incorporated, and that is, when the Cardinals have a cause, look out. When they don't have a cause, look out below. And once again, they felt disrespected to some degree, and it was Sunday Night Football on the national stage. I mean, at this point, we should not be surprised the Cardinals reacted like that and turned the tables. We've seen him react like that before.
See, something bigger is happening here, Paul, with this football team.
I think I know where
Wolf's
going, and I agree with that, yeah.
Something bigger is happening here. This is not the team of last year. Not the team where I think I would agree with what you're saying last year in 2008. But there are three reasons why I think this team is totally different. Number one, I point to their 5-1 record on the road. That is a sign of a good football team and a mentally tough football team. Number two, I go to the Tennessee Titan game where Kurt Warner suddenly could not play after he practiced all week long. And now Matt Leinart, with what, 10, 15, 20%? I don't know how many reps he got, but he didn't get a lot. Suddenly Matt Leinart is your starting quarterback. When you give professional athletes, when you give human beings, forget about the professional athlete, when you give human beings an excuse to lose, and that's exactly what the Arizona Cardinals had, a built-in excuse to go out there and tank that game because now we lost Kurt Warner, the Tennessee Titans are hot, Vince Young is rolling.
And they got down 13-3.
They got down 13-3, and what did they do? They came back and literally put themselves in position to win that game. They didn't tank it. And the third reason I point to it is the San Francisco 49ers had lost to the Seattle Seahawks before the Arizona Cardinals Cardinals ever took the field against the Minnesota Vikings on Sunday night, and what did they do? It did not matter to this team. They went out and they took care of business. Three examples as to why this is a mentally tough, mature football team as opposed to what we saw in 2008.
Or maybe that's all hogwash, complete malarkey, and it's all about Kurt Warner, Darren Urban. Maybe it's simply, as Kurt Warner goes, the Arizona Cardinals go. Is he there? Is he playing well? Game over or game in the loss column?
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far, because obviously with every, you know, every game takes a little bit more than the quarterback. But obviously watching what Kurt's done, I mean, he's had, what, the 100-plus rating, the 120-plus rating or whatever it is.
That's four straight.
Four straight, which has only been done apparently one other time in NFL history, Johnny Unitas.
Johnny U.
It's as much as the sky was falling after he kind of fell apart in the Carolina game with the five interceptions, which, you know, he said at the time, I have that clunker every once in a while, and that's what happened. He has been on such a high, which, you know, obviously got interrupted because of the concussion. But, you know, these last, whatever it's been, four appearances, which is, what, 12, 14 quarters, unbelievable. 12 touchdowns, no interceptions. I mean, he's playing as high a level as probably he's ever played at.
Kurt Warner has conducted his own cash for clunkers program ever since the Carolina game. And you mentioned the numbers. No picks, a dozen plus. I think it's a Baker's dozen touchdown passes. We got the math right on Sunday night. And, you know, I mean, how do you game plan against the Cardinals right now? You're San Francisco. You're Sergeant Singletary. I mean, there you were. You were Brad Childress. I mean, the Cardinals have the Pro Bowl wideouts. They have Kurt Warner. They have the two-headed running game. And, oh, by the way, they've got an offensive line that just shut down Minnesota, Ron Wolfley. So, I mean, we heard Trent Dilfer say it this week, right, on ESPN. There are two teams you don't want to see in the playoffs, and the team he listed first, the Arizona Cardinals.
Well, let me go champion my victories. Kind of like Paul started this podcast off at the top. Let me
edit this out.
Go back to what I said last year about this team. I said this is the most dangerous football team in the NFL. Do you remember me saying that they were dangerous?
You've said that multiple times.
They were also dangerous to themselves many, many times. But when you talk about volatility and you talk about a team that can light it up with the best of them and play at these incredible highs and yet from time to time these declivitous lows, as opposed to what we've seen last year, it was the Arizona Cardinals. Again, I think that is changing. I think that dynamic is changing, which makes them even more lethal, in my opinion.
You know what else I think is changing is how this team is viewed nationally. Not just as being a winning team and being a more consistent now. They've yet to join the elite, and Kurt Warner and company, they admit that, and they don't deserve that yet. They got to put together a winning streak. They got to avoid those clunkers, etc. But this label of the Cardinals as a finesse team went largely out the window, I think, on Sunday night. And, you know, I love the quote from Jeremy Bridges after the game where he said, look, everyone wants to say the Cardinals are a finesse team, but we'll hit you in the mouth. End quote. I mean, that said it all. And every guy I talked to in that locker room after the game, they're like, look, just because we have a high-octane passing game doesn't automatically mean we're a finesse team.
Well, and you really saw a lot of examples of that on Sunday night, whether it was Tim Hightower's multiple stiff arms on that last run that he made, that 32-yard run, or Larry Fitzgerald busting through six or seven tacklers to turn that 8-yard gain into a 15-yard game early in the game.
He looked like Earl Campbell on that.
Yeah, and then obviously how the lines, quite frankly, dominated both sides of the ball. I mean, that's necessary. I mean, heck, you could even go back to Kurt Warner and being physical and taking some of the hits he did, including that last one, which jacked up his hip a little bit. He should be okay, but you know, to stand in there and to do that stuff. I mean, it's tough not to say that this team is physical, and some of that is because they've gotten back to the running game. They have a little bit more balance, but I think some of that is just that mentality that's obviously seeped in with Ken Whisenhunt. I don't think they go to the Super Bowl last year if they didn't have physical nature to them, but I think they've taken it to a new level. And I talked to Anthony Beck, the veteran tight end, and he said one thing that struck him is when he played against this team in 07 in Tampa Bay, he goes, I think this team tried to play physical, but oftentimes it was almost a faulty physical. I'm paraphrasing now. And they would do stuff after the whistle to try and kind of do things rather than actually during the game. And he says now, he goes, it's happening when, you know, before the whistle's over, it's happening the right way. And he goes, and we're just building on it. And he says, well, I think we've been doing it for the last 2 months.
I think it kind of changed as well. The Tennessee Titan game, I want to go back to that game right there just because of how well they were playing. They were playing so well on both sides of the ball. And I think a lot of the national experts, the pundits, if you will, the analysts, they were looking at the Cardinals and saying they were in position to win that game. They were, with Matt Leinart as their quarterback, they went on the road, took on the hottest team in the National Football League with Vince Young, and literally had that game in the bag if they could have made one play on three different fourth downs. I think that really got their attention. And then watching what happened again Sunday night against the Vikings, I think when anytime you play against a team that has Pat Williams, Kevin Williams, Jared Allen, has that unbelievable offensive line, Brett Favre, the three receivers, Adrian Peterson, and Adrian Peterson has 19 yards on 13 carries, that was confirmation that what they had seen the week before was indeed a football team that really was starting to come together. And I think that's why the Cardinals are starting to get respect because of what you just said, Paulie, because people are perceiving them now to be a lot more physical and a lot more capable than they had before.
I mean, AP had 19 yards rushing on 13 carries, second lowest total of his career in a game, but seven times he was stopped for a loss or no gain. Jared Allen not only had no sacks, he had no tackles. And I tell you, when you're looking at the game film, and I don't know how much you guys have broken this down at all, I'd really like to know this, and I'm going to ask a couple of guys this. Jeremy Bridges against Jared Allen, how much help did he get?
He got a lot.
Yeah, he did get a lot of help.
I mean, I saw some of the plays, but okay, all right.
Yeah, he got a lot of help. We chipped a lot more with a running back, of course, or a tight end than I've seen us do in the past, and rightfully so. You know, we changed
second
up
leading sack guy in the NFL.
Absolutely. We changed up the protections against Jared Allen to help Jeremy Bridges, but everybody does that when they play a great pass rusher. You don't want to give him the same type of protection. You change it up. You slide to him. You slide away from him and put a chip on him. You go ahead and you go with gap protection, whatever it may be. And, I mean, there's a number of different things you can do to help out a tackle like Jeremy Bridges, but I'll give you a perfect example. Jeremy Bridges had to block him one-on-one during the game. I don't want to make it sound like he always had help.
That's what I want to throw in. That doesn't take away what Bridges did, which is a very
exactly
good
right, Darren, and a salient point right there. I'll give you one example. Anquan Boldin's 39-yard touchdown, a back shoulder fade, a beautiful throw by Kurt Warner to Anquan Boldin. That was Jeremy Bridges one-on-one locked up against Jared Allen, and he gave Kurt enough time to make that throw.
Look, the bottom line is you're concerned with Mike Gandy and his injury, and the Russ Grimm and Ken Whisenhunt like the continuity of their offensive line. They always have. That ended a string of 31 straight games, including the playoffs, where that five-man unit all started together. That's troublesome. But to be able to plug in a veteran like Jeremy, who held up very well, and yeah, he had help, but, you know, pass protection isn't just about those five guys. It usually isn't. There's other things going into it. It's about how fast the quarterback makes his reads and whether the receivers are running the right routes. That's always part of the protection, quote unquote. So I think ultimately it always comes down to a bunch of different stuff. And if you boil it down, you still needed Jeremy Bridges to have a really good game. And I think he did. And I think that was really important. And I think it says a lot for this team to be able to have a guy step in like that and do that.
I just enjoyed the demeanor he brought to, the nastiness, the attitude. I said this Monday morning, but I talked to him on Friday, and I began my little interview there, and I said, so tell me about the challenge that is Jaren Allen. He said, what challenge? And I thought he didn't hear it. It's a loud locker room. No, the challenge of going against the second, and he looked me right in the eye, and he cut me off, and he said, what challenge? I said, okay, yeah. This guy's ready to go.
He said
he didn't blink.
He told me early in the week, which I remember thinking to myself, I don't know if you want to be saying this publicly, but he said something along the lines of, he goes, Jared Allen isn't special. He goes, he's a good defensive end, but there's always lots of good defensive end. You got to block whoever you block. And I'm thinking, I don't know if you want Jared Allen isn't special out there, you know, on a Wednesday. But you know what? Jeremy talked the talk, and then he walked the walk.
He did. He said essentially the same thing to me, saying what separated Jared Allen was just the motor. Just his want to, just his get up and go. Other than that, he wasn't an especially talented guy or skilled guy more than anyone else he played.
Yeah, and that was something I was going to say right there. Jared Allen, you've heard me talk about the third rail back, the running back that can go around you, through you, and over you. Well, Jared Allen is not a third rail defensive end to me. The disaster scenario, that third rail, because he doesn't have a bull. He doesn't have a good bull rush. Because of that, he's an edge and an underneath guy, an underneath and an edge guy, an edge and then a spin guy. You know, and because of that, you really don't have to respect like a Dwight Freeney. When a Dwight Freeney, oh, what a bull rush Dwight Freeney has. That's number one. Number two, the only other thing I'd like to say is a lot of times a professional athlete will trash talk, and you've heard me say this, they will trash talk to do one thing and one thing only. And that's to get their focus and their concentration and their intensity level where it needs to be.
Well, here on Cardinals Underground, you heard Darren Urban, you heard Wolfley's three keys. Paulie Pigskin's going to throw out two things I'm noticing, two trends right now, gentlemen, okay? I've done my little analysis here. Number one, you guys mentioned how everything was mixed up on the O-line. A lot of the different pass protections, Coach Wisenhunt mentioned at halftime as I was trailing Andrea Kramer there and trying to listen above the crowd noise, which was stellar, by the way. And I've never seen a sideline reporter, by the way, get in 17 questions on the walk from the bench over to the locker room. Well done by Andrea Kramer. I'll give her props.
Don't make me bring up my Andrea Kramer story.
She set the bar very high on that one, okay? So what I mean by that is this. Every game the Cardinals go into, you just have this assurance they're not going to get out-coached. And as you go into the playoffs, you look at certain teams on the landscape and you say, not only do you match up well with them, the O-line, D-line, quarterback, different positions, you match up well coaching-wise. You know, Coach Wisenhunt and the assistants, I get that sense right now. I mean, there are certain teams out there you would look forward to playing in the postseason, Cowboys, just based on their coaching staff. And you think, man, you would have an advantage right there. That's the first thing I'm noticing. Number two, whether it was the training camp the Cardinals ran, okay, the lack of physicality in that training camp and how much attention that got, especially compared to the 49ers, the team on the schedule this week, maybe it was the 3 weeks in a row of victory Mondays in November. This team seems like it's getting stronger. And not only is it getting more physical, I mean, the endurance. I mean, you saw it with Larry Fitzgerald, right? Going Larry Zonka, breaking tackles there. You saw it with Q and how much better I think he looks now in December than he looked in September.
Well, it's funny. On the last point, it seems like there's been a lot of players bringing up John Lott lately. Darnell Dockett's done it multiple times, and I know Larry has done it before too, and those guys really buy into the whole thing. And, you know, part of the whole deal is you're supposed to be – the whole point of a strength and conditioning program is to make sure that you're prepared for later in the season. And I agree. They look unbelievably, in a lot of ways, healthier than they did earlier in the season. And I'm, for whatever reason, I think having the days off even this week where Coach Wisenhunt admitted on a normal Monday night football game that he would have had them in for a Wednesday practice and there just would have been an extra practice. And he gave them Wednesday off and just decided to push everything back to Thursday, Friday, Saturday, in part to keep the routine exactly how it's been, which is the three normal days of practice leading up until that game. But also, I think, to give them that extra day. And we talked about, like, Kurt Warner's hip. He was sore right after the game, limping pretty bad. You kind of gulp a little bit. But he said he was a lot better Monday. And then all of a sudden you have two full days off where you don't have to do anything. I think that's important for this team that's quite frankly earned some of these off days.
For example, John Lott, did he not get Kurt Warner into the squat rack starting last season, right? At least once a week, the quarterback, 30-year-old Kurt Warner, gets into the squat rack.
And
he's quitting.
Yeah, he said 30, didn't he? He's a little older.
Did I say 30 or 38? I meant to say 30.
30. No, he said 30.
I meant
like
to say
Kurt Warner
38.
Wishes.
Edit that in.
And you know what? I'm 28, Paul. But no, your point is right on the money. John Lott, a strength and conditioning coach. I don't think you can get stronger as the season goes along. It's about maintaining. It's about being able to maintain anything that you have gained in the previous off season. It's just the NFL is so physical. It's just such a beatdown. I don't think you can get stronger. I just think you can maintain.
Can you separate yourself from other teams, though?
If you maintain better than the other team,
right,
who's getting stronger?
So it appears like you're getting stronger, but the other teams are just going on a more rapid decline.
Exactly. And let's not forget, too, all right, the guy that is responsible for the entire schedule, if you will, for a football team.
Did he say 30?
Is the head coach. It's the head coach. Ken Wisenhunt comes from a Super Bowl champion organization. Ken Whisenhunt has been around a long time, and he's been around an excellent organization and an excellent coaching staff, and you can see that because of how he sets the schedule for the Arizona Cardinals now. Never forget that.
Which brings us to the casserole theory of viscosity, and what we say when the Niners were 3-1 and everybody was jumping on that bandwagon. I think Ron Wolfley was the drum major for that one, leading that parade down Central Avenue,
I believe. No, it wasn't me. I was actually saying the 49ers would be the team to challenge the Cardinals in the NFC West. Boy, I was dead wrong.
From 3-1 to 5-8. Now, does it have anything to do with this sort of training camp Sergeant Singletary ran? Does it just have to do with a lack of talent? Does it have to do with changing quarterbacks and your offensive philosophy midseason? Guys, they've gone from a power running team the Cardinals saw in week one featuring Frank Gore to a team against Seattle that threw the ball 45 times and ran it 12. Well, and they had the lead or it was tied almost the entire game.
Here's the thing. Obviously, they made that change, but see, to me, they make that change because they had to in a lot of ways. I remember sitting in Omo's dorm room doing this podcast back in training camp.
I can smell the socks now.
We brought up the whole physical beat the crap out of your team in training camp versus not.
I can hear the garbage truck dumping the dumpster.
There you go. And I remember, I think I made the point then. It's like the reason the 49ers are not going to be able to catch the Cardinals this year isn't because of a training camp yes or a training camp no. It's because they're not as talented.
And
that's why they've changed a lot of the things that they've done on offense. It's because they were struggling so bad because they couldn't do anything. They changed quarterbacks, they changed offense. They've marginalized Frank Gore, thank goodness. I think this all comes back to desperately trying to stay up with the Cardinals when they can't, no matter what Michael Singletary says, he does pay attention to the Cardinals. He does care about them because he has to.
But Wolf, they go with Alex Smith, obviously, and he specialized in the spread, obviously, Utah, and that was his background. But to change your offensive philosophy mid-season? I mean, that's pretty radical, isn't it?
No, it is radical, but I think it speaks for how important the quarterback position is in the National Football League, the type of quarterback you're going to have. You know, I think with Sean Hill in there, they looked at it and said, Sean Hill being an effective quarterback means we better be a run-first football team through and through. We better run it because that's going to allow him to use – he had very good play-action mechanics. That's going to allow him to use those mechanics and the play-action game to be successful throwing the football. So, yeah, they've gone through a bit of a philosophical change, but it's still – look, anytime you talk about playing the San Francisco 49ers, it's still about Frank Gore. I know that Alex Smith and Vernon Davis have really developed this dynamic chemistry together, and now Michael Crabtree as well. Michael Crabtree, to me, is having a successful rookie campaign, yeah. And I highly question how effective he was going to be when they finally signed him and brought him in. How many games did he miss? I just know he missed all of training camp.
Yeah, he missed a good chunk of the first part of the season.
A lot of September right there. It's truly amazing what Michael Crabtree is starting to be able to do right now. But it's still about Frank Gore. This team is built on – Frank Gore is averaging 4.9 yards per carry. Think of that for a minute.
Well, think of this though, Wolf. And this is – and I hate taking issue with you because, of course,
that's fine. Take issue.
Brilliant. However, they just lost to the Seahawks this weekend, 17-14. Close game. I mean, very close game. This was not having to rally through the air. It was 14-14 all game long.
They've lost six games by a touchdown or less.
Okay. But my point would be Frank Gore had 9 carries in that game. If Frank Gore is getting 9 carries in a game that had never gotten away from you, I don't know if Frank Gore is still that guy. I know Frank Gore, reading some of the stuff out of San Francisco, I'm pretty sure Frank Gore is questioning, where he stands with all this. And I don't know if they really understand where he can fit into this. And ultimately, I think that helps because I think this team, I agree, has always had an issue with Frank Gore. And if you're going to, again, marginalize him, that's great for the Cardinals.
Yeah, but go back to Alex Smith and the game that he had. He had his best game as a pro, and that very game that you're citing right now, as I take issue with you, Darren Urban, over 300 yards passing, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. look, without seeing the film, I have not been able to watch the film yet on that game, but I will guarantee you, Seattle was daring Alex Smith to beat them. They were probably jamming up that box big time to do one thing, and that shut down Frank Gore. And I don't care. It is so difficult to run effectively against an eight-man front, and if you are getting a steady diet of that as a coach, and you're sitting up in the booth looking at that, you're like, Coach, we got to throw the ball. We've got to throw the ball. Because right now, they're jamming up the box. They're daring Alex Smith to throw the football. We got to do just that.
Well, it's funny because the Monday press conference, I actually heard it in its entirety. I was doing this Bay Area TV show on the Niners, right? They obviously heard about my prediction with the Vikings and Cardinals on Sunday night. And so they brought me in, and I was listening to it. He was getting peppered, Mike Singletary. I mean, question after question about the run-pass ratio, and he kept saying the same thing. Guys, go back, look at the way they were stacking the box. We did what they were giving us, and we went to the air.
But the problem with that becomes you only got 14 points out of it, and you lost to an inferior team.
And they gave away one because they ran a reverse on a punt return after they took a 7-0 lead. That's the other part where he just got lambasted by the local media.
I guess, and they
fumbled it.
And Wolf knows this better than me, obviously, being on the inside and playing for so long. And I understand you got to kind of take what they give you type thing. But in a close game, there's got to be more a closer to a balance. Because isn't that what we've gone through here? Isn't that what we kept hearing here? Was early in the season when the runs weren't there, it was because they're stacking the box, we got to throw the ball. But what happened to this offense when this team basically forced their way to throw the ball? It was it opened things up. And I personally think,
well,
I understand you throw up more often, but 9 carries for Frank Gore?
Well, let's put it this way. Look at how effective the Arizona Cardinals have been able to be when Adrian Wilson walks down into the box and they can hold up on the corners. Now, think about last postseason, the way that changed the way the Arizona Cardinals could play defense and called games, Clancy Pendergast, calling games. It changed everything for this team. Once you had DRC, who could walk out over a Roddy White, walk out over a Steve Smith, and doggone it, hold up over that guy. Now suddenly, oh, you're the number 2 rushing team in the NFL? Watch this. We're just going to stick Adrian Wilson up into the box. Oh, you're number 3? Well, we're going to stick A-Dub in the box again.
And did I just get some blue juice?
We're going to dare you to throw the ball against us, because the last thing we want is for Adrian Peterson to line up and run over us. And that's what happened last Sunday in a lot of rundown situations. The Cardinals were jamming the box so that Adrian Peterson was going to have a hard road of it.
Well, let me – last thing on this subject, but I just have to ask you, Wolf. Is it – we're going to make sure – that Frank Gore doesn't beat us, or is it we're going to make sure Alex Smith has to beat us? It's just like the Tennessee thing. I mean, the Cardinals played it perfectly, because ultimately you're saying you're going to make Vince Young beat you throwing the ball.
Yes.
Now, he did.
He did.
Unfortunately, but that's what you got to do. And if I'm playing the 49ers, while Gore scares me to a point, I'd rather just have it in Alex Smith's hands. It's less about worrying about Frank Gore and more about I want Alex Smith to prove to me he can do something.
And how much of this just goes out the window because the two teams know each other so well?
Yeah, that's also true.
Right? You know, I mean, the Cardinals are 8-4, Niners are 5-7.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not just you, Wolf. That was Darnell Dockett. A lot of guys aren't going there, but just like Jeremy Bridges said it and backed it up, Darnell Dockett said it to start the week when it came to the 49ers.
I can't wait to this one. This game is personal, and they know it too. So we're looking forward to that. And they don't care about us beating Minnesota. We don't care about them losing to Seattle. When we line up, we know this is going to be one physical game. So like I said, we're going to be ready, and I know they will be too.
All right, Darnell Dockett right there on the Niners. And look, for many reasons, you know, we've cited him here in the podcast. We'll add one more to the reason why this is not the same team, and we're not looking for the same roller coaster ride that occurred last December with the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, they feel like they owe the Niners something big time, and especially that defense, guys, because 5 out of 6 possessions in the second half of the season opener were what? Everybody now 3 and out. And that one possession that was not three and out was the polar opposite. It was 15 plays, 80 yards, Sean Hill the game winner, the little flip to Frank Gore and the miscommunication by the Cards defense, and boom, they stole that game in AZ. I mean, after the Cardinals had that stellar 14-4 record over the prior two seasons, right? And after they had gone 6-0 in the division. So there's no chance of a letdown on Monday night, even though the Cardinals have the commanding three-game lead and they're about to clinch.
I've thought that all along. I've thought that for weeks. I thought that regardless of what happened against the Vikings, the Cardinals could have won by 80 or lost by 80. I thought all along this game has been circled on the schedule. It would have been anyways, but especially after the way that first game went, you know, Adrian Wilson quietly in his own way right after the Vikings game, in this deep voice, we owed him something. Hey, that's
look, man.
That's all he said. But you know, they want this one bad.
Yeah, look, the Arizona Cardinals 9-1 in the division, 9-1 in the NFC West over the last 2 years so far. That one loss, of course, to the San Francisco 49ers to start the season, and. I think I've already laid down 3 points where this team has showed me that it is a mentally tough, more mature football team. This would be the fourth. This would be the fourth point right here that I would point to, because they don't want – even if the Arizona Cardinals right now are going to win the NFC West, okay? They are going to win the NFC West. This is what I'm saying. Paul, do you think I'm going on a limb by saying that right now? I don't think so. They're going to win.
How embarrassed you must be right now after I really went on a limb last week with my Cardinals over Vikings prediction, and then you're going with that? That's weak. Get that out of here.
They're going to win the NFC West. But this game, they do not want to lose twice to the 49ers and win the NFC West in so doing.
Did you know the TV ratings are in, and they are robust, number one nationally? How about the Cardinals had 21 million viewers on Sunday Night Football in that game? The number one rated show nationally. Number two, Wolf, I know you T-voted it. ABC's Desperate Housewives, but they are like 6 million behind, okay? Locally, by the way, how about this? How about a 32 rating and a 46 share for the Arizona Cardinals? Once again, the most watched TV show in AZ.
I got to be honest, I'm still chewing. You have an Andre Kramer story? I mean,
As a matter of fact, it was 1992. I was with the Cleveland Browns. Todd Philcox. Do you remember Todd Philcox?
Sure.
Quarterback out of Syracuse. And we were playing the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I think it was a Monday night game. And, of course, they asked, you know, I was a special teams captain, so Andrea wanted to talk. Is it Andrea or Andrea?
Well, move it along.
Andrea wanted to talk to me. So, of course, after practice, I came into this room, this little room, and she looks at me with this very quizzical look, and she says, "Who is Todd Philcox?" Because Todd was going to be starting in place of Bernie Kosar. So she was asking this Larry Merchant very deep, dark almost, "Who is Todd Philcox?" So I looked right at her and deadpanned it, and I said, "Well, Andrea, he's a thin, balding man from Syracuse University whose last name in the King's English, oddly enough, literally translates as one who stuffs chickens." You should have seen the look on her face. You should have seen the look on her
face. Was this on camera?
Ashen. Yes.
It was on camera.
On camera.
Did she use it? She go with the soundbite?
I have no idea.
He was playing a game. He doesn't know.
Go to YouTube. See if someone can find that soundbite.
Oh, that was good.
Who is Todd Philcox?
Yeah. Speaking of QBs, can I amaze you with this one stat I didn't get into the Sunday night broadcast, all right?
Yeah.
Just to make everybody, including Darren Urban, appreciate the presence of a franchise quarterback like Kurt Warner, are you aware that Bernard Berrian, in his 5 years in the NFL, until playing with Brett Favre this year, you want to hear the quarterbacks he was with until Brett Favre showed up and solidified the position? Okay, here we go.
Grossman.
Chad Hutchinson, Craig Krenzel, Jonathan Quinn, Jeff Blake, Rex Grossman, Kyle Orton, Brian Greasy, Tavares Jackson, and Gus Frerotte.
Jeff, what's your point?
There you go. That's all you need to know about how important quarterback is to winning football in the NFL. That's about as risky as Wolf going out and saying that the Cardinals are going to win the NFC West.
Yeah, that's right. Kyle Orton, I forgot how bad he's doing in Denver.
My last thing, I got to throw this out because I heard the Jeff Blake thing. Greatest quote I've ever gotten from a player. I called him the day they cut him here, and he was mystified that he was cut. And I was just talking about how his career has gone, and he goes, "You got to understand, it's not like I played bad ball. I've just been on bad teams."
That was my excuse.
Well, I don't know about you guys. I got one last word here on Cardinals Underground. Skomas. That's the last word. I'm gonna leave everybody with that. And that's a Sunday night dinner in San Francisco by the bay at Skomas.
You know we're not going.
Wolf, what do you mean?
Yeah. What, we're not going to Skomas. We got a 2 a.m. wake-up call on Monday morning.
No, wait. Okay. We better hash this out off air. For Darren Urban, Ron Wolfley, Paul Calvisi, Jim Omohundro, we got to figure this out. Enjoy the game, everyone.